G'day, how you doing? My name is Jez, if we haven't met, and it's really good to have you with us, no matter what's brought you along. But if you're a father, if that's you, happy Father's Day. I'm blessed to be a father myself. I've got three kids that are outside of the womb, and one that we've just discovered forming in the womb. So we're excited about that and kind of freaking out about that as well. It's going to be four kids, five and under. Don't know how it keeps happening. It's just... look at my wife and she's pregnant again. Now, there's heaps that I'm yet to learn as a dad. Heaps. But there's one thing that I have learned as a dad. And fatherhood has taught me about perspective. And I wonder, dads, if you can relate to this picture that I found that describes a dad and his son having a bit of fun. This is that event seen through the dad's eyes. But then, of course, there's the kid's perspective. Yeah, he's like, yeah, this is awesome, Dad. Higher, higher, more, more. But there's one more perspective, yeah? That of the mum. Jez, what are you doing? Trying to kill our kids. It's all a matter of perspective, yeah? One reality viewed from different perspectives. Which one is true? Another thing that fatherhood has taught me is about frustration. Not just the kind of frustration of never being able to sleep in again or go to the toilet with some privacy. That's all frustrating. Your hi-fi speaker's been smashed, your house being trashed, that's frustrating. But I'm talking about that deeper, that bigger frustration, particularly of realizing that I'm not in control of so much of life, particularly in regards to my kids. Tiffany, our eldest, she was three last year and she broke her arm really badly, needing surgery and pins in her arm. And I remember being in the ER as her kind of arm hung limply. And I remember the look in her face, a look of shock and bewilderment, as though, Daddy, how could you let this happen to me? This pain. And actually, a little later on, she would say to me, Daddy, why did I break my arm? I said, well, sweetheart, you fell off your bike and you hit the ground. She said, no. She'd understood the physics. She wanted to know why that much pain, that much suffering could come upon her. This was her first experience of a broken world with a broken bone, and she had big questions. And she actually said to me, Daddy, am I going to keep breaking my bones? Am I going to keep hurting in life? And behind that question, of course, is there any hope of the pain ever ending? Now, how you would answer those questions will expose your perspective on why the world is the way that it is. Why the world is the way that it is. Why is there so much suffering? Is there any solid hope of a brighter future? Well, the verses that we come to in the Bible tonight help answer these questions. Because the Bible is not some old rule book. The Bible is God's vision of reality. It's God's perspective on what is true. What is true about himself. What is true about ourselves. What is true about the place we find ourselves in history. In fact, what is true about where all of history is headed? And so tonight, as we consider these verses in the Bible, it's an invitation to you to be swept up out of our tiny 21st century perspective into the cosmic perspective of God. And consider, how does that line up with your perspective on reality? Now, the verses that we're going to look at, and there's only a handful, address three ages, three time periods of the present, the past, and the future. So let's go there. Let's see what God has to say, what God sees in these events. Firstly, let's start with what these verses say about the present age. And not just the 21st century, not just 2013, but all of history, except a tiny little slice. And we find that as we read through these verses, that this age is characterized by two things: suffering and hope. Let's take the first one, suffering. Verse 18, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. Who is suffering? Well, the whole created order. Verse 22, we know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. So creation, that is all that is in the sky, on the land and in the sea, is groaning. It's actually personified, we read, to be waiting, to be longing, to be groaning. Now why is it groaning? Well, it's because it's in a state of frustration. Have a look there in verse 20. The creation was subjected to frustration. Now, frustration occurs when something isn't able to do what it was intended to do. When we aren't able to do something that we want to do, we fall short of what we know we want to be able to do. And so here, the creation is described as being frustrated, as actually not being all that it was intended to do. Why? Well, it's actually in verse 21, bondage to decay. And so, rather than working the way it was intended, which would see life only flourish, life exists, but the creation itself is very hostile towards it. It's in bondage to decay itself. Earthquakes, tsunamis, floods, fires, global warming. This creation is groaning. Now, the created order, though stunningly complex and beautiful, is actually on the decline. And notice that there's a distinction made within this groaning creation. In verse 22, it's the whole creation groaning. But verse 23, not only so, but we ourselves groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship. And so the Bible considers humanity to be creatures, to be created, to be part of the whole created order. But there's a distinction, because humanity actually stands at the apex of all creation and is able to enjoy something that no other creature is. I'm going to come back to that. Yet clearly ourselves suffer the frustration and the decay that is true of the natural realm. Now, dads, we ought to get this, yeah? Do you look, maybe for you, you look at your son and he's, you know, he's carving it up in the surf and you're just flat out trying to get one wave, yeah? You're just kind of not where you were. For me, I've had surgery in both knees, and so I just get jealous of my kids as they just get around on hands and knees. I'm like, I want those. I haven't got them. I'll never have them again. I'm frustrated. Hearing. Dads, you get this? Hey? It's good. My dad's here, I'll speak up. You get this, don't you, Dad? Now, you might think that is sometimes like a good thing, you know, just drown it all out. But the human ear, did you know, is the only organ that we're born with that is actually fully functioning, but from that moment only ever declines with age. The Bible acknowledges that this is a broken and dying world, which is not a popular view in our community. We don't want to face that. We have lifestyle shows with the jingle, life keeps getting better all the time. But you can only believe that to be true if you've got this naive, teeny tiny perspective on the world. So even increase that perspective a little to your own life. Everything that you enjoy right now is actually going to fade away. Eventually with death, but even before that, I was talking to my grandma just last week. She was telling me of her frustrations of losing her mind, of losing her memories, losing her mobility, of her independence. It's a horrible, horrible decay. Yes, there is much to be thankful for in this world, but we all share in the lot of creation's frustration and decline. So why is this the case? Why so much suffering? Well, it's not just the Bible. Every perspective on reality needs to deal with these big, deep questions, yeah? I saw just this week on that show Catalyst, the science show, it featured a bunch of physicists who were speculating, who were giving their ideas on how we explain the existence of such a finely tuned universe. So finely tuned that life is, it's amazing that life is even possible. Why is that? How do we explain that? Well, for these physicists, at least, these scientists, a creator God is just unthinkable. It's ruled out immediately. So how then do they explain it? Well, one of them was saying there's a whole field of thinking that says it is consistent with physics to think that the world that we are in right now, your life, my life, is actually just a virtual simulation of a kid in the future and his kind of video game. That means any and all suffering here is actually the direct cause of some kid in the future, a kid who's like the one who likes to pull the wings off a fly and watch it suffer. You tell that to a parent holding a dying child. You tell that to a kid of a family that's tearing apart at the seams. Don't worry, it's just a video simulation. Does that ring true of our experience? Does that satisfy why things are? Well, the atheist says it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it satisfies or not. This is all there is. There's no more. So just get on with life. Just deal with it. But let's come back to the Bible's perspective on why this suffering is. And it's here that we actually, in these verses, move back to the second age that is on view, one in the past, an event in the distant past. Have a look at verse 20. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it in hope. Now hold on to those two little words, in hope. We're going to get to those. But firstly, we see that there was a moment in history when the entire creation was subjected to frustration, not by itself, but by another. Who could that be? Well, it could only be one with the power to do so, which is the Creator himself, God. Why would God do this? Is God just like the kid who enjoys pulling wings off a fly and watching it suffer? Not at all. Not at all. And it's here that we actually need to add some pieces that are found elsewhere in the Bible, including Genesis, the part of the Bible that we had read earlier. And when we come there, we actually find that God created the world good, that he's a good God, and that he created humanity at the apex of all creation. That is, he was distinct from all other creatures in that he was made able to relate to God personally and intimately, something that no other creature can enjoy the way that we can. And so mankind, humanity, is created to be under the loving rule of a loving God. And such is the dignity of humanity that he's actually given the responsibility, the privilege, of then ruling over the created order on behalf of God, over the natural realm. And the picture that we get in the beginning is a good loving God in harmony with his people, in harmony with the creation, with their environment. There's order and harmony. But then disaster strikes. Rather than humanity being content in being ruled over by a loving God, he decides he wants to be God, to actually boot God off the throne and decide what is right and wrong. How are we going to live? And in doing this, sin enters into the world. And order and harmony give way to chaos and hostility between God and people and creation. See, at its heart, sin is not about smoking or swearing or speeding. It's about our hearts that have actually rejected God, that have thrown God off, thrown the Creator off and actually chased after the things that he's created instead. And in doing this, humanity fell from being in a relationship that was right with God into one that was broken. But such was the relationship between man and his environment that he takes the whole natural realm with him. And so the creation was handed over to frustration because of our rejection of God. God handed man over to what he chose and its consequences. What you and I continue to choose and its consequences, which is life outside of relationship with God. And the effects of that, all around us, in us. The brokenness in the natural realm has its roots in the brokenness in our moral realm. That doesn't mean, though, that a 20-year-old bloke who dies in a workplace accident was somehow more evil than a man who's 80 years old and dies in his sleep. Jesus makes that exact point in Luke chapter 13. But what it does mean is that suffering comes to all because we all live in a world that has been broken at its core, its very essence. Now let's say that this vision of reality is true. And I don't assume that you've all come to accept that right now, but just for a moment, take that it's true. That would at least have to tell you this, wouldn't it? That sin is very, very serious in God's eyes. Consider all the suffering in our world has its roots in human rebellion against God. Then he must take that rebellion far more seriously than we do. But, thankfully, the message of the Bible, the message of Jesus, doesn't end there. It's one of great hope. Because we're not done with God's perspective on this world and his purpose in it. The sufferings of this present age are great, but held alongside a hope that is far greater. Because though God's judgment on sin led to our world being subjected to brokenness, he did it, verse 20, in hope. He did it with a glorious end in mind. One so glorious that verse 18, all the sufferings of this world are not even worth comparing to the glory that is to come. The horrors of sufferings are not denied. They're just put into perspective. A little bit like, I got a sand pit for my kids. I got a ton of sand and dumped it in there. It's pretty awesome. And to think about the number of grains of sand in this sand pit is just kind of mind-boggling, yeah? Imagine trying to count those. But whatever the number of grains of sand is, compare that to the number on Terrigal Beach and all the beaches on the coast in the world. Yes, there's a lot, but not even worth comparing to something else. Which means, friends, look at the pain of this world. The glory that is to come in this future age must be unimaginably good. Almost unspeakably good. And this makes sense of the image that's used in verse 22. That the whole creation groans as in the pains of childbirth. So imagine this. You're in a hospital and you hear the shrieks and the squeals and the groans of a woman. It matters a lot which ward you're in. If you're in the oncology ward, the cancer ward, on the other side of those groans is death. But if you're on the maternity ward, and I've been there a few times now, on the other side of those real groans, that horrible pain is new life, is joy. Such joy that almost makes that pain evaporate. Why else would women go back a second time? It's a big difference between men and women. We'd do it once. Women go back again and again. Why? Because of the glory of what lies on the other end of that pain. Which tells you this, suffering is not random. It has a purpose. It has a design. It actually leads to a destination. And this destination, the content of this hope, is unpacked a little in these verses. Let me show you. Verse 21, the creation itself will be freed from its bondage to decay. No more tsunamis, floods, fires, entropy. Luscious grass without bindies to sting your feet. A swim in the ocean without blue bottles to welt your skin. Sunny days without UV rays that'll cause melanomas. A creation no longer frustrated. Life without frustration. But there's more than that. Verse 23, we ourselves wait eagerly for our adoption of sonship, the redemption of our bodies. Now, there's a qualification here for who these people are, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Just think quickly about redeemed bodies. What are they? They're bodies that will no longer age, get sick, and die. They're redeemed bodies that will actually be conditioned to enjoy their new environment that they will be enjoying forever. You know, you think a mango is sweet. You can have new taste buds to taste mangoes of a creation that's not frustrated. It's just going to be unimaginably sweet. New hearing. Hearing that will never decay so that you won't hear conversations and laughters of those that you love. In fact, you remember that YouTube clip of that kind of mum age woman who was deaf from birth, but she had those implants put in and they turned it on for the first time. Anyone see that? It was a couple of years ago. She couldn't hear her whole life. She's 29. She's a mum. They turn these things on and she hears for the first time, and her response is, it's chased up. It's amazing. Tears of joy. That's in a broken creation. Hearing to enjoy music and laughter forever. New eyesight. No more glasses or contacts. But eyes that are actually capable of taking in all of the vividness of this new creation. Yellow that is just so much more yellow. It's going to be stunning. But not just eyes to appreciate the gifts of this new world, but to see the giver in all of his glory. To actually come back into face-to-face relationship with our good God. In fact, God gave the Apostle John, one of Jesus' good friends, a glimpse into this future reality. And we read about it in Revelation chapter 21, where John saw a new heaven and a new earth. And I heard, he said, a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And he who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. There's just a taste of the glory that is to come in a new creation for people with redeemed bodies. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Just a pipe dream, yeah? Just wishful thinking for weak people that just can't deal with the reality of life. I'll come back to that. But there's a key piece to put in place yet, and that is, what is the basis for this redemption? How is it actually possible that what we see right now will give way to something far more glorious? Well, as Andrew said, we've been taking a bunch of time working through this letter, and the first four chapters deal with that very issue. See, many people say there can't possibly be a God in light of all this suffering. But when you come to the Bible, in the Bible, God says, I'm right here. In fact, I'm not just kind of able to see all of the brokenness in the world, though he does. I've actually entered into it and tasted it firsthand. See, a number of times tonight we've heard about because of what Jesus did. What is that? Well, God, the eternal Son, who existed in perfect relationship with his Father in glory from eternity past, at a moment in history stepped off that throne and into the womb of a young woman. He came out the birth canal, and God, fully God, became fully man so that he would grow and experience life fully as we do, as a human. But unlike us, he didn't chase after the things of creation and seek his hope and his meaning and his purpose in those. He only ever sought his purpose in the Creator God. He only ever submitted to his will and was obedient to that, to the point of landing himself on a cross, which was the will of his Father. And this is another event that if you didn't have the Bible's perspective, what would you see? You'd see a bloody mess of this deluded Jewish man who thought he was something but turned out to be nothing, pinned on a tree. But we've got God's perspective on what was taking place. And right then, God was pouring out the just punishment for our sin on his Son, though he was innocent. Why was he doing this? So that we who are guilty might actually be spared. So that there might actually be a way back into relationship with him. Not because of anything that we've done, but because of what Jesus has done. Was it all wishful thinking? This future glory? No more death or mourning or tears? Well, it would be if Jesus stayed dead. But he didn't. He rose. Though his body was in the tomb and decaying, decomposing, he physically, bodily came back to life. And what was decaying gave way to life. Life that would never die again. See, the resurrection of Jesus is the beginning of the great reversal, where what was true of him will be true for the physical cosmos and those who have put their trust in him. The resurrection of Jesus says this glorious age to come is not a pipe dream, it's a reality. Jesus was the first fruit, the first taste of it. The one who actually made a safe way through the grave into this glorious age. This is God's vision for the future. This is the hope that we have not yet seen in all its fullness, but trust is coming. Verse 24. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. Friends, where is your hope? What is it that actually makes your life worth living? The thing that gives your life meaning and purpose? What is it that gets you out of bed in the morning? What is it that gets you through hard times? Is your hope based in things that can be seen? Maybe your wealth, which in many cases can buy your way out of a lot of things, but not unhappiness or divorce and ultimately death. Is your hope in your toys that'll just become outdated and too small? Is your hope in your family? Do you actually live, dads, for your kids or for your grandkids? Sure, things might go well for a while, but man, the amount of family pain and ultimately separation that comes in death. Is your hope in home projects, just the next one, to kind of build up your little kingdom? Is it in the next holiday? Which obviously you need, because the last holiday didn't cut it, didn't satisfy it, wasn't enough. Where is your hope? Is it in something that you can see? And notice, by the way, none of those things are necessarily bad in and of themselves. It's when they become the ultimate place that we tap meaning and purpose in life. That's when we've actually swapped out the Creator God for His creation. None of them will work. None of them will satisfy. Because hope that is seen is no hope at all. Now, what the Bible is not asking you to do here is to take this big, blind, giant leap of faith. Rather, it's inviting you to look at how God has shown up into history. He's inviting you to look at the person Jesus and to see if God is good by looking to Jesus, to see if God is powerful by looking at Jesus. Events that are testable and verifiable. Tons of evidence that is compelling that, yes, God is there. And based on what I can see on what God has done, I can now trust Him in the things that I can't yet see. Can't see with a human eye, a telescope, a microscope. But who is this hope for? Well, this text and the Bible generally makes very clear that you can be confident that this is your reality, that this is your hope, if you can be confident that you are a child of God. Catch it, verse 19. The creation waits for the children of God to be revealed. And verse 21, will be brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. Verse 23, it's those who have the first fruits of the Spirit who groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship. This hope, this vision of reality, is only for the children of God. So who are they? How do you become one? Well, it's the person who, regardless of their background, what they have done or haven't done, has seen their need for God's forgiveness and have seen that God has actually provided that in Jesus coming and dying, and has put their trust in Him, that His death was died in your place, that your punishment was taken by Him, though you didn't deserve it. That's grace. This is the person who moves from being an enemy of God, whether you feel that or not, that's God's perspective. You move from being this person to be a loved, adopted child of God. I'll finish up. Last week, we looked at the previous section, which is all about the children of God. And we looked at two marks of a person who can be confident that they are a child of God. First mark was someone who is no longer at war with God, who is at peace with God, and therefore is now at war with their sin, who battles sin, not successfully all the time, but continues to be more and more like Jesus. And secondly, it's someone who shares in the sufferings of Jesus, who identifies themselves with Him come what may, whatever rejection, whatever ridicule. And it's someone who continues to persevere, trusting that God is good in spite of the hardship that comes. But let me give you one more big mark of a child of God from the verses that we've looked at tonight. And it's this. Your life, right here and now, will be shaped by the glorious life that is yet to come. Your life now will be shaped by the life that is yet to come. You've got your eyes fixed on the glory to be revealed. You eagerly await it. And because of the glory that awaits you, and because of your confident hope, not your wishful thinking, but your certain hope that it awaits you. You don't have to get frustrated by trying to find meaning and purpose in a world, in the things of this world, that are only broken and decaying and only ever lead to frustration. Your Facebook feed doesn't need to be flooded with things that are the envy of everyone, that next great experience, because you know the glory that awaits you. Dads, your bucket list, the things that you've got to do before you die, does not need to be filled with things that in the perspective of eternity are meaningless. Instead, you can use this life to love and serve others. Because you're a child of God. You've been adopted by God. You call God Father. And in coming to God and coming into His family, you come into His family business. What is God about? What's God doing in the world? He's redeeming it. He's saving it. He's bringing hope where there is only despair. And so we get caught up into that work as an agent of our Father, living out this life of hope and sharing the words of this hope. You get to care about the things that God does because you now see the world as it is according to God's perspective. Dads, particularly, have you noticed that our kids, I mean, mine was as young as three, they're like philosophers. Yeah? They're asking the big questions when they're young because they're very aware of their kind of teeny tiny size and a big world out there. So who am I? How do I fit into all of this? What's life all about? Daddy, why is there suffering? Will it end? But have you found that kind of as life tracks on, as just the humdrum of life or possibly your successes, you just shrug those kind of things off. You don't even think about those things. You're just in autopilot. You think you got it nailed. Have you honestly faced up to these big questions? Have you found satisfying answers to them? And not just answers that satisfy, which is in part, but answers that you can trust the truth, that there's actually evidence for. And if you haven't, I encourage you to come back to those questions, to pursue answers to them, because they are there. And to all of us, but particularly you young crew, this vision of reality is here in the Bible to prepare us to suffer and to suffer well. Because if hardship hasn't come your way, it will. But when it does, you've got categories to work with. You've actually seen the world through God's grid, through His eyes. And so though you might be in the dark of what is happening to you and why it's happening to you, you're not in the dark about who God is and whether He's good. You look to the cross. Whether He loves you, you look to the cross. Whether He is powerful to use suffering for the purposes of good, you look to the cross. This text in the Bible is here to prepare us to suffer, but not so that we will throw the towel in. Come on, God, if I'm your kid, I expected better of you as a father. No, no, no. It's here to help us endure suffering as Jesus did, to look to the glory that is on the other side of that suffering as Jesus did, and to look to that age where we will actually see Jesus. He's going to wipe every tear from your eye. Are you living in line with that reality? Let me pray. Father, we are just so thankful that you have not left us in the dark, that we're not scratching around for answers, but that you have spoken into this world, that you have entered into this world in the person of your Son, and that in Him we know that you are good, we know that you are wise, we know that you are directing all of history to a glorious end for those who are your children. And so for those of us who you have graciously adopted, we thank you. We ask for your help to persevere, to not get sucked into living life as though this was the only one, but to live life in light of the one to come. And Father, for those who are not yet convinced of these truths, I ask that by your Spirit you might do that, because your word is powerful. It is powerful to bring life. It is powerful to bring hope. And so I ask that you would do this, please, for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.